You're listening to The People's Pitch, the official podcast of Minneapolis City Soccer Club, brought to you by footballstadiumprince.com. Let's start the show.
And as I talked about just a couple minutes ago, as Joe Watt stands over this one, he appears to be the one taking the penalty here. This is a huge confidence booster if you're a Duluth.
Worst case
Elder
scenario for City
for
right here.
And it stopped!
Yes!
And it stopped!
Totally
Matt Elder!
Himself.
Matt Elder redeeming himself! Oliver with the right foot. The shot is
goal! Oliver!
And Justin Oliver will break the scoreless tie. And it is 1-0 Minneapolis City. It's Hutton now on the offense with the left foot.
And another goal!
And it is now 2-0 Minneapolis City.
Good finish.
Nick Hutton taking his quick victory lap.
Welcome back to the party, friends. This is the People's Pitch Podcast, the official podcast of your Minneapolis City Soccer Club. I am your host, John, and with me, as always, is the voice of Minneapolis City Game Day, the Nate Morales. Nate, are we still on that rain delay versus Manitoba, or is that over?
I don't know. I feel like I just saw another lightning strike, so it's going to be another 30 minutes before we can think about kicking off. Unfortunately,
man, we banked someone up hours on that one.
if only our club was managed better, we would have been able to control this rain.
I really did like when we're walking to the car and we hear the other team complaining about how we are not a well-run club and this is a disgrace. And then
so disorganized.
As soon as I closed my trunk of putting all my stuff away, like hail started coming sideways, and I was like, "Yeah, that was our fault."
Yeah.
Anyways,
so this week we've got a tale of two wildly different results that we're going to dive into, along with a tasty preview of what could be the last game of the 2023 campaign. And for me, it's the most anticipated game, I'll tell you that. First is going to be the lightning delayed Manitoba match finally happened, and then it stopped happening. We've got the clunker against RKC that, I guess, what are you going to do when you've got so many guys hurt and only 13 travel? And then finally, Tuesday, Duluth FC coming to town to reignite that rivalry. Let's dive right in. Splash.
So as far as the Manitoba game comes, it seemed at times this schedule would never happen. But indeed it did, as FC Manitoba made the trip back to the Twin Cities last week to reboot the match versus the Crows that was put on hold due to poor air quality a month prior. So it took a full 4 weeks for us to get this game back going again. And with all jokes aside about them bringing the bad air with them the first time, this match quickly came on the heels of the team's locking horns about a week prior, I believe, Nate, up in Canada. And it's all the Crow where we saw the Crows get 3 of their 4 points from that yearly Canada away trip. And the sun went down and the storms rolled in. But before that, we had some quality action as you and I were up in the booth together because Nordo wasn't there. So that was fun to get the band back together again. So why don't you have at it, Nate? Tell us what happened.
Yeah. So, it was as we had said, the game was made up at McAllister College, not taking place at Augsburg, which was a little different venue for us. And it's
a
different
nice
crowd.
Press box.
Really? What it's a nice one. Also a different crowd when you're over there in St. Paul, because you got, you get the St. Paulites, the people that pretty much don't leave the confines of 94 to the, well, I guess I shouldn't say 94 North. They don't cross the river over to Minneapolis that often. And they
love Cedar
to,
Riverside. I mean, yep, it might as well
pretty
be
far.
It might as well be Canada.
But we got all the St. Paul fans out, which was great to see. I loved it. You and I had commented that it would have been beneficial for the Crows to start out a little stronger this game than they did in the previous game. It took until the 70 something minute when we were up in Manitoba for there to be a goal, and that only came off of a penalty. And they must have heard us. I'm going to tell you, it sounded like the Crows were listening to everything we said and delivering on the field, because in the 16th minute, Hakeem Morgan is played through, and he beats beat the keeper. I think his name is Evan Barker, 1v1, slotted it through the 5-hole. That is a dollar fine, plus a goal. And Minneapolis City was up and feeling good. And I'll tell you, it really was a great example of how Minneapolis City was bossing this game early. And I've got 2 points, and I'll let you kind of respond, John. The first way we're bossing this game is offensively. What we saw more this game than we have in the past was Minneapolis City looking to maintain possession and build up the play versus lumping balls downfield when they think they've got a running winger in Shea Bechtel or Darley Florville, right? Like,
right.
And that's something that Coach Craig has said they've been working on, right? Make the pass where you keep possession versus the pass that just moves it upfield and then you lose possession immediately. So we saw that and it worked really well, whether it was Stevie Lamar able to move the ball through the midfield all by himself, or whether it was the combination of Lamar, Morgan dropping back a little bit. You had Florville, you had Mensa, and you had Bechtel able to move that ball in and out of the midfield to find dangerous spots. And it was, and really we were testing that goalkeeper from all different angles, which was nice. Mm-hmm. The second way that I think we were controlling this game was defensively. You could tell from the outset that Manitoba was looking to play the ball forward as fast as they could to their two forwards. One of them was Rivecco. The other one was Diego Rivecco and Medina, I believe the other guy's name was. Mm-hmm. And Nick Hutton at center back and Wes Lawrence at center back were definitely up to the task of keeping up with those runs, keeping up with those long balls. So I would say those are the two ways that we were bossing this game early. And that's before the second goal.
Yeah, for me, the storyline for me was that aggressiveness in the attack. We talked about it where a lot of times throughout the season, and we'll get into a full recap of the season here in a few shows, maybe next show. We don't know yet. But it was a case of just that long ball to one player versus trying to combine an attack with two to three at a time. And then once we started doing that over the course of the last few games, we started seeing the goals come. We started seeing results come. But then we also started seeing a little bit of a complacency to slow down on the attack. And I think I was watching back the goals that were posted on social. And I think you mentioned it right. I was commenting on the fact that Darley Florville, he has the speed and the bag of tricks to put a defender on skates, but what he was doing was slowing down and allowing the defender time to collect himself. And at that point, you gotta go right at a guy. You gotta yep. go right into the face. And he did that and then scores that second goal, which ended up being the decider. From a defensive perspective, I agree with you. I think what you left out was Guerci. I thought his if you can see my hands right now, folks, I'm doing the...
How could I forget Guerci?
Yeah. I thought Griffin did a really great job of connecting himself to the back line. And the only downside was when Lamar and Mensa got too far stretched forward on that equalizing goal right before half for Rivecco, who we said was the danger man. And Wes Lawrence getting caught out in the attack as well. And Guerci and Nick Hutton having to try to figure out what to do with three guys coming straight at them through the middle. And obviously we didn't want that because we knew what Rivecco could do. So that happened. My last line about this game is, I don't want to say it, but it has to be said that a early second half injury to Nick Hutton might indicate that was the last time we might see him, because he's battled hamstring injuries throughout his whole career with Minneapolis City. And he went on a run. You could tell his eyes got big. He went on what I feel is kind of an unnecessary run from center back and comes up lame with a pulled hamstring. And you hated to see it. I didn't want to say it at the time, but now that I've had time to reflect on it, like, could that be the last time we see Nick Hutton?
Yeah. And I think that injury also informed, unfortunately, the result following, but we'll get to that later. Really quickly, I do want to touch on, you mentioned the second goal, which was Darley Florville getting a hold of one of those diagonal balls that was after some of that midfield play, after that possession based play. That is why he was open on that. He pulls it down, he drives right at the keeper and is able to do a nifty step over move and roof it for the second goal. Manitoba able to get one back. Like you said, there were a couple crows out of position, and it was definitely a kind of a 3v2, 2v2 scenario where the center backs were trying to figure out who they were going to who they were going to mark, and the ball is played through to Rebecco, and he's able to snag one back for Manitoba right before halftime. And that was the score going into the locker room. Minneapolis City feeling really good about their ability to threaten. Same with their ability to defend. But coming out, we saw some changes. Lamar and Florville both off, both for minutes reasons, planning for that long road trip to Racine on the weekend. And City was able to hold Manitoba to that 2-1 scoreline for the rest of what would be the remainder of the game. What happened was, here's the thing. We're looking up, and John, you and I could see the storm approaching. You and I are looking to the west.
We're
looking right at it over the beautiful Mack Groveland neighborhood across the river. We're looking at Minneapolis, and you can see the storm coming. So we knew that there would be a potential for a delay. But right as the game clock passed 80, we got our first sighting of lightning to the north, as the storm kind of came around to the north of St. Paul a little faster than it came at us. And that was it. The refs called a pause for 30 minutes for lightning delay. And as soon as that 30 minutes was about up, more lightning. And then it just kept coming faster and more furiously until it was finally like, we're just not going to get this game in. The lights at McAllister turn off due to neighborhood regulations at 10 p.m. You can't have sound or anything coming out of that stadium because we're right in the middle of that residential neighborhood. And so even if we wanted to wait for however long for the storm to have passed, and it kind of passed, quite honestly, it was done by 10:30. Sitting around for 2 hours waiting for that storm to pass was just not optimal. So that was right. The referees decided to, or the league and the referees decided to call the game. That's a W for Minneapolis City. We took all 6 points from Manitoba this year, which was a first. And
feeling pretty good
going into that RKC matchup. But we weren't sure what we were going to get with RKC, because we saw them draw against St. Croix. They'd given a couple teams fits, but a couple other teams were able to punch right back.
They'd already qualified for the playoffs.
So what are we going to do? And at the looks of it, after that Manitoba game, we knew that the Crows squad that would go to Racine was going to be a little light, to say the least, due to injuries. Summer travel's tough. And, this is the most inopportune time for that to happen, seeing as we really needed that win if it meant we were going to come back into the Minnesota Super Cup with a USL 2 team. But that's hard to do with a team like RKC when they're at home and the firepower that they have.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess why don't you roll right into the RKC game? Let's just talk about that.
It was tough. It was tough, right? We found this out when I was trying to watch them play another team earlier in the season. I think it was St. Croix, when St. Croix was visiting them. It's hard to watch that because you got to buy a subscription.
I found out why.
You're an amateur team.
I found out why that is. It's actually the venue. The venue has the setup through that network that like high school games are produced through. So that's what they have. Yeah. And so
I was at the Loons game watching my phone, and I see that text that we've got a goal. It was like, game started, we have a goal already. Third minute goal from Shea Bechtel off the corner, and we had some early life, and it's like, oh man, like, yeah, we only travel with 13 guys. Luckily we had one goalkeeper.
I thought your text to our group thread was spot on. Like we've done better with less in Wisconsin. So
that's for sure, right? So I felt fairly optimistic, and we had a strong squad, and there were some guys that hadn't played a lot of minutes yet this season, so they had fresh legs. And that third minute goal is like, okay, this thing could work here.
Yep, yep. And then that third minute goal did come from on the back of a corner kick via the head of Shea Bechtel, which, out of all the guys on earth that would get up for a header.
Hey, man. The mustache wanted one.
Yeah, the mustache wanted one. I think that we can kind of put a bow on this one, Nate, real easily, in that after that third minute goal, there were signs for early life, but then things started to happen, like guys getting tired, injuries, we went down to 10 men due to injuries. They went down to 10 men due to a red card. They had already scored a few goals. But the introduction of newcomer Gabe Kuffel in net, he played great.
Xavier prospect?
Yep, Xavier player. Yeah, so he goes to the University of Xavier. He kept us close on a number of great saves. And the unfortunate part was that they were able to get three past him, and it could have actually been worse. So that's how the score line ended up. It was 3-1. I think it was kind of like, we called it a clunker in the beginning, because before the game even kicked off, you know, it had the make of something that was less than ideal because of the lack of firepower and us needing to try to send more people, because this had a meaningful game. This game was meaningful. If we won, we would have gotten back into the Super Cup for next year. Yeah. But it sees us not do that. In Rochester, with their victory earlier in the day, they secure that. So it was, you know, it was kind of a ho-hum conclusion to the season for us, but there was a lot of signs of life, and we'll get into those in much more detail when we do our full season recap.
Agreed. So the USL2 team out of next year's Super Cup, but still in this year's. We've got a game coming up on Tuesday night, welcoming Duluth for our second home game of the Minnesota Super Cup. And Duluth, John, is coming off of a really, really interesting situation this week. I think it was also Saturday, as they had to, for a team that went 11-0-1 on the year, they were undefeated. They only had that one draw earlier in the season against Med City, I believe. But they went 11-0-1, and they still needed to play a playoff game to get to the playoffs. It's very, like, feels very UPSL-like. And it's something that Minneapolis City never had to face, because if you just win the North, we were in outright, right? But that's a change. So Duluth goes into this game kind of, it's now they're in must-win scenario. And they end up going down to, by the end of the game, I believe they were down to 8 men. Med City down to 10, plus their coach had a red card. It was just an emotional, messy, gnarly game that saw Med City win, I believe, 2-1.
Mm-hmm. Correct, 2-1.
And I think for me, what I was looking at leading into this game was like, man, I hope Duluth wins. Hope Duluth wins and advances into the playoffs, because one, they belong in the playoffs, having such a great regular season record. But two, they're going to be focused on those playoffs instead of some sort of bullshit Super Cup that they've already qualified for anyway. I shouldn't say bullshit. Yeah. But like, they've already qualified for next year's Minnesota Cup. Why not? If I were Sean Morgan and that Duluth organization, I would say, we're going to play the game. We're going to try to win, but we have to focus on advancing in the NPSL playoffs. And now that they have no NPSL playoffs, what does that mean for them? I really wish they would have had something else to, you know, I wish they would have been watching another game in the future instead of focusing 100% on Minneapolis City on Tuesday.
Yeah, so let me unpack this one. I watched the full game, and I even went back and watched the second half an extra time the next morning, because I had kind of a late night. So it was like, you know, I was like, all right, well, I'll go back and try to figure out what happened here. So first and foremost, I want to say this, and this is coming from someone who is not a Duluth apologist. I feel Duluth got jobbed in this one. In a game with this magnitude, you don't want to bring in the referee. And I don't want to be that person who is like, well, the referee sucks and they did a bad job. But after watching that game, Nate, and then rewatching the second half and then extra time, there was a total of 8 cautions and 4 red cards. So 12 total cards. Yes, some of those were accumulation. Wow. of cards. But the referee kind of lost the plot in the middle of the second, or the middle of the first half, with basically anything that was deemed at any level aggressive, yellow card. So that we've talked about it many times in the show. Then what does a player do? Does a player then like walk on eggshells? Do they continue to play hard? Then it kind of went to where like then a bunch of stuff was getting let go. And at this point, it's 1-0. So it was 1-0 Duluth, right around the turn of the half. So I will say this, the referee impact of this game, and it's unfortunate, but here's the other side of the point, Nate. You talk about the reason why this tournament is even happening is we were the deciding vote to say no every year, because what's the point when we were in the league, what's the point in all of that great work you do to then have something potentially like this happen in order to go to a national playoff? That totally sucks, right?
Yep.
So fast forward into the second half, and then all hell broke loose. There was red cards for accumulation of unsporting behavior. There was red cards for unsporting behavior from Neil Cassidy, the coach at Med City. And the lion's share of all this stuff was happening to Duluth. So I don't understand what Neil Cassidy even cared about, because his team had equalized at that point. It's another scenario where Neil Cassidy is unable to coach his team in a big game. We've seen that happen.
Well, we saw it happen when we played them in the playoff at Benilde St. Margaret. You got a red card.
Yeah, the day before, and then the day before, yep. 2 years, a year and a half, a year later, another mm-hmm. red card before a big mm-hmm. game. So, anyways, I'm not going to be apologetic about that piece of it, but I think Duluth kind of got screwed. It was very one-sided. And before we get into our game, I'll say this. I don't know who Greg Gilmore is. He's an assistant coach for Duluth, and he doesn't know who I am, and he doesn't know history that I have in this rivalry. But I got on social talking about, match
I saw this.
So, again, I don't know you. You don't know me. I am siding with you that the referee was the reason why you were not in this game, not the reason why you lost, but the reason why you were not in this game and ultimately finished. And I think that sucks. I agree with you there. But to even say that about a fourth division U.S. soccer playoff game, like, there is maybe one person on earth probably that would ever entertain fixing PSL match, and that person would look at what they said and reevaluate their life choices and be like, no, ain't nobody got time to even conceive this. So, like, come on, man.
Again, I'm with you. I think that's super funny, and especially given the things that Minneapolis City had gotten in trouble with the NPSL for. Like, seems like not the best move to accuse your league emotions of fixing a match.
Emotions are high. I totally get it. We've all been there in the game at one way or another where you're like, you're so pissed off. You just say what's on your mind right away. But like, this one is like, it's over the top for me, because seriously, no one has time to even conceive a match fixing scandal for a freaking NPSL playoff game. So anyways, Coach Gilmore, I respect you, what your team did. I think your comment was so far over the top that let's just pretend it never happened, because it's so ridiculous. So anyways, Nate, now we talk about the matchup that we have on our hands. So as far as this one goes, the two teams have locked horns 11 times. This will be the 12th time. Currently, Minneapolis City holds the all-time record of 5 wins, 4 losses, and 2 draws. So this could be the leveling out potentially, or it could be the establishment of, you know, the front foot of dominance in the rivalry. So you have that to play. Duluth was also the hottest team in the NPSL, holding the number one spot in the nation for almost the entire season. They went undefeated throughout the regular season. Obviously, we know how their season ended. We just talked about it. But they had 11 wins and 1 draw. We've also talked about on the show, and here's where folks like Coach Gilmore and others might not be happy with me. I think the NPSL took a giant step back this year. I don't think that I'm not discrediting the fact that Duluth has a strong team. They always have. We've talked about it ad nauseum, how many great players they've had on their roster and how they've been a driving force of this conference and in the league for years. I mean, they made it to the Final Four a handful of years ago. They've made it the furthest any team from our conference has ever made. You can't take this away. However, I think the league is down big time.
Yep. Okay.
And I'll get into a little bit of how I see this. But no discredit to the fact that we know it can be a weird night in lacrosse and you lose to them or you tie them. you know, like, so a weird night up in Fargo and you drop points that you shouldn't drop. So to have 10 wins and one draw, the only draw coming against the team that eventually beat you in that weird playoff game, that aside, good season for Duluth. Gone now though, Nate, are household names like Kyle Ferrer, Joe Watt, Tall, James Westfield, Tom Corcoran, Damian Vieter, Aiden Hill, and Alberto Saroy. I probably left off a few other ones, but these are household names for fans that are in our area. You know, like, yeah, they remember these guys. But they have a host of new players that I think are worth mentioning. I have a couple here. Goalkeeper Zeke Foltz. He is
Zeke.
The big Zeke, they call him. He's a big guy. he's in net, and he follows the same mold of the goalkeepers they've had in the past. In front of him is, I think, their only 50 plus capped person in club history. That's Jake Starling, center back Jake Starling.
Yeah.
We played against Starling multiple years. Really good, really, really tough, really good on the ball, good in the air. He's their captain. We've heard of him before, but not like the others that I mentioned. At central midfield, they have a very strong spine from back to front. At center midfield, they have Andre Solaris, who is a really, really just full package center midfielder. Not the biggest guy on the earth. He's relatively short, but quality on the ball, decision making, distribution. What you want out of like a box to box number eight. Up top, they have NPSL vet Tyler Limmer. He moved away
from Sioux Falls.
He finally moved. So
I saw him play against Joy. He had a goal against Joy of the People. Yep.
Yeah. So we know what Tyler is. Tyler's a good number nine. He's crafty. He's been in this league for many years. You know, going through all the way through college and shortly after, played for Sioux Falls for many years. He's your typical veteran striker that they typically have. And they had in Watt and Farrar and Westfield. And then for me though, where it gets dangerous is attacker Kosta Domorowski. I think this guy is one of the best NPSL players that I've seen at any level or at any team across our time in the league. I mean, this guy is dangerous whenever he touches the ball. He has a tireless work rate. He's been coming off the bench lately, so there must be something that Coach Sean Morgan sees in him coming off the bench versus starting him. But you never know, you know, how they put their game plan together to face us this week. So that's kind of who I see as the players to really watch for them, since we don't really get to see them like we used to. So I'll pause there to see if you have any feedback.
Well, I mean, like we said, Tyler Limmer used to play for Sioux Falls, and he was fine, but that team just in general never quite able to put it together, so he probably is happy for this opportunity.
He's got service.
Yep.
You want that as a striker.
Absolutely. The other thing that I want, like, Domorowski last year when we played them was really dangerous. Yeah, absolutely dangerous. And I think it was his free kick that made Kaylin Matta-Castillo the hero on the day, where Kaylin was able to save that. But he's dangerous from the spot. He's dangerous from all over the field.
Yeah, distributing. He can go to goal. Like, he's like, you know how like every year there's like one guy from Duluth that like everyone's like, I wonder what happened to that guy? And then they pop up playing at like a higher level. I think he's that guy. Maybe you see him in the USL2 next year, or you see him off another place somewhere, domestically or abroad, but he has the skill sets. I think I don't know him by any means, but watching him play, I'm very impressed by him. My overall thoughts on their season though, I don't think that I mentioned before, I don't think they were really tested. They scored 39 goals and gave up 6 this year in 12 games. Actually, yeah, in 12 games, I didn't count the playoff games. So they scored 40 and gave up 8 all year in all competitions. I think that they struggled when games got physical on both ends, but they overpowered teams with that strong central group and their outlet play with Domorowski. And then they have like two guys named Philippe Oliveira and let's see here. I think I have it up. Philippe Oliveira and Felipe Ortega Gonzalez. Both of those guys come off the bench or start depending upon what Domorowski does. And they're very quick to get out on the counter through very tidy possession quick passing possession through the midfield. A lot of something we talked about with the futures with like two touch Robles is like great, but four touch Robles, we really wish he would go back to two touch Robles. It's like that with their midfield. Like when Solaris is on and guys like Starling out of the back can find that line breaking pass into them, they counterattack really quick and they have quality. So that's pretty much what they did to teams all year. I think that then you have from a defensive perspective, you have Starling who's good in the air and he's a veteran. You know, how many times did we have guys that had, you know, more than a handful of caps that were the guys that you can count on in games like versus Minneapolis City or versus Duluth, where you know it's going to get a little bit high intensity and you need that guy who's been there before. And he is definitely that for them. In net, like I talked about Zeke Foltz, I think he's a really good shot stopper, but where he got caught, I think, you know, maybe six out of those eight goals that they got scored on this year is in his decision-making to come off of his line. He's very much so an all or nothing goalkeeper coming from his line. And I think both of those have positives, but they also both have very clear negatives. Like there were some times we got caught off his line and they just conceded goals because of it. And other times where it was him who made the you know, the spectacular save coming off of that line, but you can get caught either way. And then I think the last piece that I saw this year from them is that against Minnesota United's U19s in their Super Cup pool match, they were totally outplayed for large stretches of the match by Minnesota United's kids. I mean, there were times where they didn't really even touch the ball much and they were pinned back. And I don't think they like being pinned back. So then there was a 1-1 draw. They got a late one. And it was only a 1-1 draw because the kids from Minnesota United missed 7 out of 8 very clear goal scoring chances. We're talking like open netters, things like that. Jeez. That I would count as basically an automatic goal. So they should have actually, in my opinion, lost that game if Minnesota United's kids would have been able to finish on the day. And then ultimately then Duluth started to overpower them physically, a lot of fouls, a lot of physicality and tackles. And then that's where it kind of lost the plot and the cards started to come out for both sides. And it was period. So I think that was their only true test. You know, Med City, I don't think is as great as they've been in the past. I feel like it was really a one horse race in the league in MPSL North this year. And when they were put to the test, you saw them fold a little bit. So it'll be interesting to see what Minneapolis City can do in this matchup. I think that when they match up, records get tossed out.
Well, hold on real quick, John. I want to say that jives with what I've seen. You know, I watched Duluth at Joy of the People, and I'll say that, you know, we know that Joy Athletic, well, along with the rest of the NPSL North this year, not as competitive as in years past, but like you said, Domorodsky not in the starting lineup. And all these things you said are exactly what I saw, right? Joy was able to pin Duluth back and force mistakes from their center backs, force mistake from Foltz. Foltz came off the line and Joy missed two sitters. There was one open net sitter, like right in the middle of the 6-yard box. And another one where Croton was, I think 1v1 with the keeper. And he tried to go low to the left instead of just chipping him, just popping it over the top, and it would have gone in. So I think that game in the first half probably should have been 3-1, and Joy would have been winning it. But exactly like you said, exactly how they dealt with Minnesota United, Duluth comes out, they get physical. We all know that that Joy team is a little bit smaller, and that's exactly what it took. So I think, you know, the storyline is there on this Duluth team. I think it's just a matter of can Minneapolis City, you know, take advantage of it.
Yeah. And like I was saying, when these two teams play, the records get tossed out the window. It's like, it doesn't matter. It could be, you could be undefeated. You could have never won a game all season. The tensions are always high. So I'm interested in seeing what the Crows do, mainly from a roster standpoint. We're kind of limping into this one, where I still think there's some quality that's healthy for the Crows that Duluth probably hasn't seen that level of quality this season. I also think that there's an opportunity where maybe you see some of the upper half of the futures players that are still active right now, maybe getting a chance to play in this one. And I think that it will be the most talented team regardless that Duluth has faced all year. But for Duluth, you and I were kind of talking about it, like, how do they rebound from the Card Fest and that heartbreaking loss to Med City? They don't have another game to look forward to. This is it. And same with us. Like, this is it. It's win or go home here. So do they come out with a chip on their shoulder like they got screwed? That's what I would do. And I would be, I would put it all out there. Or does it fall into more of the mental side of the game again, where you start to see the cards and all hell breaks loose? Like, you don't really know. Like, emotions could still be too high from that game that was only a matter of days prior. So it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see. Like, I'm excited for this one. I know a lot of folks were really excited that this rivalry is getting kicked back up again because it went away when we moved out of the MPSL. And I think it's really great for both clubs because we still get to keep that going. And it's really what the people at this level in this area really want, is see these two teams play each other. You know, I don't think everyone's clamoring for Minneapolis City to play against Rochester FC every year, but they are for maybe getting a chance at Duluth again.
Yeah, I'm with you, John. And I think that I think that when it comes to this Duluth team and this Minneapolis City team, there just aren't that many guys left, as you mentioned, on either side of the ball
into our guys.
Well, right. That have that. I just mean that in general, that have that year after year.
Yeah.
Rivalry built up, right? There's nobody around anymore, except maybe Aiden O'Driscoll that remembers Matt Elder saving the Joe Watt penalty. There's not that many guys on the field that remember 6-1. Yeah. Maybe Jonah. Right. Maybe Aiden again is going to remember 6-1. And same with Duluth. Maybe Starling will remember that embarrassment because Hill's gone. All those guys are gone. So I'm not sure emotionally where each team is going to be, except that you know that Duluth is going to come out and feel like they've got something to prove after their meltdown against Med City. So this match is Tuesday. It's coming up Tuesday, July 18th, 7 p.m. at Edor Nelson Field. It's win or go home time for both teams in this Minnesota Super Cup. Tickets are going fast, as you would expect. Both teams hoping to have a nice contingent of fans in the stands. So head on over to mplscitysc.com and get yours before they're all gone. And that's going to do it for this week's show. Thanks again to our show sponsor, footballstadiumprints.com. John, we're less than a month away from the Premier League season. Did you know that?
We are? No.
Yeah, August 11th. And so it's time to think about maybe stocking up on some top gear from Football Stadium Prints, featuring all of the icons of some of these teams. I bet you can find a Luton Town icon as well. You might be able to find a Luton Town print of their stadium right in the middle there, their little town. That's so cute. But you can also find T-shirts and prints of lower league icons like you, John Bismarck, or Edor Nelson Field, our little stadium in the middle of our little town. And don't forget, use that code CROWS10 for 10% off everything you purchase. It all ships from here in the United States, so your international shipping charges do not exist. Thank you to the community for your support. As a reminder, Minneapolis City is a 501c3, so consider a charitable gift to the club that loves to give back. If you want to get a hold of us, if you want to ask any questions that you think you've got that are burning a hole in your brain, it's simple. You can hit the club up on Twitter at MPLSCitySC, or you can tweet at us at the show at The People's Pitch, or email us mcscpodcast@gmail.com. 99% chance that John will forget to check that inbox.
Yep.
Nate. That was John. Happen. We're going to be back to you later this week because John and I are going to be doing a pod recording in person in the middle of the woods, and we'll see where that goes. But we'll have another episode later this week with a recap of the Duluth game and a look forward to what's going on in the Minnesota Super Cup. Maybe we'll dive into some season recaps. Who knows? But until next time, you got hoofed. In the woods.
Get hooked in the woods.